Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free daily 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the changing face of America.
Hispanics, Asians, African Americans, and it's that part of the population is going to grow rapidly, especially among people in the younger ages.
Then you will hear Jonathan Evans' weekly technology report. This week, he tells us how social media is changing the ways some American police departments and government agencies operate.
We try different things to maximize capacity beyond just building new freeways or interchanges or widening the freeways. We try different ways to inform travelers of the conditions that are ahead of them.
And later, as always, we will present the making of a nation. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English because we exist to help you learn everyday American English. We speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Springfield, a community in the state of Virginia, is about 24 kilometers from the U.S. Capitol building. There, you will find what could be the face of the next generation in America. In a word, this is the face of diversity, the face of many races and ethnic backgrounds. Anne Ball reports.
30 languages are spoken at Crestwood Elementary School in Springfield, Virginia, with about 660 students from kindergarten to sixth grade. Many are recent immigrants who came with their families looking for a new life in America. They came from Afghanistan and Korea, Vietnam and El Salvador, Ethiopia, and Indonesia. At home, they still speak the 30 languages of the countries from which they came. How is it that those may be the faces of the next American generation? 4 states, California, Hawaii, New Mexico, Texas, and Washington, D.C., now have minority-majority populations. That means that there are more minority people than white people. Minorities are people who identified themselves as Black, Native American, Asian, and Hispanic. Within the next generation, minorities will be in the majority across the United States. That is according to new information released by the U.S. Census Bureau. And it may happen sooner than had been expected. The U.S. will become very different than the one current people have seen in their lifetimes, says William Fry of the Brookings Institution. He is a demographer and author of Diversity Explosion. He says there will be many more people of color in the United States.
Hispanics, Asians, African Americans, and it's that part of the population is going to grow rapidly, especially among people in the younger ages. And that's really important because this growth of minorities is happening just in time to counter the very slow growth and rapid aging of the white population.
The average age of white people in the U.S. is now 43 years old. There are more deaths than births among the white population, according to the census data from July 2014. In just the last decade, the population has become more racially and ethnically diverse. The Census Bureau said the percentage of minorities climbed from 32.9% in 2004 to 37.9% in 2014. With the declining white population, Mr. Fry says that the growth of the young minority population is important to keep the U.S. economy strong.
They're going to help make that labor force much more robust, much more vibrant in lots of ways.
The Census Bureau report also shows that millennials, people born between 1982 and 2000, is now the largest group of Americans. There are now 83.1 million millennials, compared to 75.4 million baby boomers, the older generation. Mr. Fry says millennials are more racially diverse than the older baby boomers. 40% of millennials are racial minorities. He says they are a bridge to the next and even more diverse generation.
So the millennials are playing a very important role in the United States because they're I guess, introducing people to a new America that we're going to have to look at in the next several decades.
He says, as a group, millennials are more connected by technology and social media to the rest of the world. And Mr. Fry says they are more open to diversity.
They do share an appreciation for and an openness for racial diversity. They're open to people of other backgrounds, of other nationalities, different lifestyles.
The millennials, with their diversity and open views, have already had an effect on society. The television show, Fresh Off the Boat, about an Asian immigrant family is popular. And same-sex marriage is more accepted by this younger generation than the older one. No doubt, the 2016 presidential candidates are working to win the diversity vote as well. Several Republican candidates, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, speak Spanish and sometimes use it to appeal to the minority voters. Mr. Fry says he is glad to see the new wave of immigrants moving into and all around U.S. cities and towns.
I'm very optimistic about this, and I think history is on the side of saying, you know, this is going to make our country stronger and people are going to be happy that that we have this change going on.
I'm Ann Ball.
our weekly look at the latest technology news. Social media are changing the ways that American police departments and government agencies operate. New media are closely watching movements by police officers and keeping cars and trucks moving on busy roads. But as our technology correspondent Jonathan Evans tells us, some officials are worried about the way social media can be used to identify the positions of police officers.
LA Metro is the name of the Los Angeles public transportation system in California. It operates buses and trains in the Los Angeles area. At LA Metro, some workers spend a good part of their day looking at video images of busy intersections and buses driving around the city. Their job is to watch video screens for traffic delays or other signs of trouble. The transit system uses information from its cameras and sensor equipment. The workers will soon use data from a social media application called Waze. It uses reports from drivers who note real-time traffic conditions. The American technology company Google owns the application software, or app. Waze has partnered with cities around the world, from Rio de Janeiro to Jakarta, to better understand traffic flow in populated areas. Kaylee Fogel works for LA Metro. He says the transit system must have up-to-date information.
Data is king. So to have a lot of data is very important. We have a lot of infrastructure data. What crowdsourcing and apps like Waze allow us to do is to fill in the gaps.
Frida Sidoroff lives and drives in the Los Angeles area. She depends on Google Maps and other navigation apps to deal with the traffic.
It is so useful. I use it every day.
The California Department of Transportation communicates with drivers through message signs on roads, its highway mapping website, and social media sites like Twitter. Patrick Chandler is a spokesman for the department. He says traffic managers see millions of trips each day.
Well, but the system is old. It's 60, 70 years old. And so we try different things to maximize capacity beyond just building new freeways or interchanges or widening the freeways. We try different ways to inform travelers of the conditions that are ahead of them.
Police departments are also using social media to communicate with the public. But some police worry that apps like Waze may create a danger to officers because Waze can identify the positions of police officers. They note violence during recent protests in several U.S. cities. The demonstrators were protesting police involvement in the deaths of African Americans. Several police officers were killed in separate incidents. Charlie Beck is the police chief of Los Angeles. He expressed his concern about new media to Google in December 2014, but a spokesman for the company did not respond directly to his concern. The spokesman said that Google works with police to keep officers and citizens safer. Civil rights groups are using their social apps to urge citizens to keep watch on the police. These developments demonstrate the growing importance of social media for the public, police, and other agencies to communicate and gather information. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Making of a Nation is coming up next. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington.
Well, Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we continue the story of America's 42nd president, Bill Clinton. He was a popular and successful president who was re-elected in 1996. But he also became only the second president in American history ever to be put on trial in Congress. Clinton's past in Arkansas became the source of accusations and questions about his character as he was running for president. These included questions about financial dealings with a land development company called Whitewater. In January of 1994, President Clinton asked Attorney General Janet Reno to appoint an independent lawyer to lead an investigation. She named a Republican, but some critics said her choice was too friendly to the Clinton administration. He was replaced by another Republican, Kenneth Starr. In 1995, the Senate Judiciary Committee began its own investigation of the president. The committee later reported that it had not found evidence of any crimes. However, because the committee was led by Democrats, there was continuing suspicion of the president among Republicans. The main cause of that suspicion dated back to a purchase of land in Arkansas years earlier. Bill and Hillary Clinton had bought the land in 1978, the year he was first elected governor of that state. The Clintons formed the Whitewater Development Company with Susan and James McDougall. The goal was to sell vacation homes along a river. However, the company did poorly. James McDougall also owned Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan, for which Hillary Clinton did legal work. Madison failed during the 1980s. The McDougalls were found guilty of wrongdoing in connection with that failure. A former local judge in Little Rock, the state capital, also became part of the story. In 1994, David Hale pleaded guilty to charges of cheating the federal government. That case was in connection with a lending company he owned and was not connected to Whitewater. But Hale accused Bill Clinton of having pressured him while governor to loan money to Susan McDougall and other politically influential people. Clinton denied the accusations. During the president's first term, investigators sought billing records for Hillary Clinton's past legal work for James McDougall. They wanted to know, in connection with the Whitewater investigation, how much time she had spent on that work. The First Lady said she could not find the records. Then, in January of 1996, the billing records appeared without explanation in the White House. That mystery only added to the suspicions of some Americans. Others thought Kenneth Starr was just wasting taxpayer money on his investigation of the Clintons. They felt it was just for political reasons. The Whitewater investigation became increasingly complex and difficult to follow. In the end, President Clinton was never charged with any wrongdoing in connection with his financial dealings. But his legal problems did not stop there. In 1994, a former Arkansas state employee named Paula Jones sued President Clinton. She brought a civil action accusing him of sexual harassment while governor of Arkansas. In her lawsuit, she said he had asked her for sex. a federal judge dismissed her case for lack of evidence. Paula Jones appealed that ruling. Her lawyers said they wanted to prove that Clinton had a pattern of such behavior with female employees, including while president. They suspected that these included a 21-year-old woman named Monica Lewinsky. Lewinsky had worked as an unpaid intern in the White House. Kenneth Starr was still investigating the Whitewater case early in 1998. He received permission to include Lewinsky in his investigation.
Hi, how'd you know it was me?
Same caller ID.
Oh, what's it say?
Linda Tripp.
A former friend of Monica Lewinsky, Linda Tripp, had given Starr tape recordings of her telephone conversations with the younger woman.
I hate him. No, you don't. You hate his behavior at times.
In the recordings, Lewinsky talked about her relationship with the president. What she told Linda Tripp conflicted with the information she gave to lawyers for Paula Jones. She had told them that the relationship had not been sexual. Lawyers for Paula Jones also questioned President Clinton. He, too, denied that the relationship with Monica Lewinsky had been sexual. On January 26, 1998, the president stated his denial to the American public.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie. Not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
Later in the year, the president agreed to answer questions before a federal grand jury.
The opening statement I made is that I had inappropriate, intimate contact. I take full responsibility for it. It wasn't her fault, it was mine. I do not believe that I violated the definition of sexual relations I was given by directly touching those parts of her body with the intent to arouse or gratify. And that's all I have to say.
This was the first time an investigating jury had ever called a president to testify while in office.
This afternoon in this room, from this chair, I testified before the Office of Independent Counsel and the grand jury. I answered their questions truthfully, including questions about my private life, questions no American citizen would ever want to answer. Still, I must take complete responsibility for all my actions, both public and private. And that is why I am speaking to you tonight.
After his appearance, the president went on national television and admitted the nature of his relationship with Monica Lewinsky.
As you know, in a deposition in January, I was asked questions about my relationship with Monica Lewinsky. While my answers were legally accurate, I did not volunteer information. Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong.
He said his actions were a personal failure, but he denied trying to get her to lie about the relationship.
But I told the grand jury today, and I say to you now, that at no time did I ask anyone to lie, to hide or destroy evidence, or to take any other unlawful action. I know that my public comments and my silence about this matter gave a false impression. I misled people, including even my wife. I deeply regret that.
Kenneth Starr sent his final report to the House of Representatives. The report suggested that President Clinton may have committed impeachable crimes in trying to hide his relationship with Monica Lewinsky. In the United States, to impeach a president means to bring charges in the House of Representatives. The charges result in removal from office if the president is found guilty in a trial in the Senate. The Chief Justice of the United States serves as the judge and the senators serve as the jury. In December of 1998, the House of Representatives voted to impeach President Clinton. The House sent the charges to the Senate to hold a trial. The two articles of impeachment accused him of lying to a federal grand jury and obstructing justice. Only one other president had ever been impeached. In 1868, the House of Representatives brought charges against Andrew Johnson. The case related to his removal of a cabinet member. The Senate held a trial, but Andrew Johnson's presidency survived by one vote. The threat of impeachment led President Richard Nixon to resign in 1974 over his cover-up of political wrongdoing in the Watergate case.
It is up to the members of the House of Representatives to vote their conscience on the Constitution and the law, which I believe are clear, and I have no intention of resigning. It's never crossed my mind.
Bill Clinton still had 2 years left as president. In public opinion surveys, two-thirds of the people said they opposed removing him from office.
What I want the American people to know, what I want the Congress to know, is that I am profoundly sorry for all I have done wrong in words and deeds. I never should have misled the country, the Congress, my friends, or my family. Quite simply, I gave in to my shame. I have been condemned by my accusers with harsh words. And while it's hard to hear yourself called deceitful and manipulative, I remember Ben Franklin's admonition that our critics are our friends, for they do show us our faults.
The Senate decided President Clinton's future in February of 1999. The 100 senators held a trial to consider the charges and decide if he should be removed from office. Each charge required 67 votes to find him guilty. 10 members of the Republican majority joined Democrats in voting to clear Clinton of the perjury charge. The Senate was evenly divided on the charge of interfering with justice, thus no guilty verdict. Bill Clinton remained president of the United States. As a historical footnote, as it turned out, Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich was himself cheating on his wife while leading the impeachment action against President Clinton. The difference, Gingrich would say years later, was that Clinton was charged with lying after he legally swore to tell the truth. In October 1999, Kenneth Starr resigned as the independent counsel. An assistant, Robert Ray, completed a final report on the Whitewater investigation. He issued his report in September 2000. The report said there was not enough evidence to prove any wrongdoing by Bill or Hillary Clinton. The Clinton presidency covered much of the decade of the 1990s.